If it's a good
I think you
option.
want this on record, so I'm gonna let it go.
Dun,
No, keep going. All
dun, dun.
right.
But
So,
to my satisfaction. Go ahead.
you ready? Welcome to Things They Don't Tell Black People About Law School. We are two first-generation cis Black women who became friends while attending a T20 law school.
And we are here to share things that we wish we knew or things that we wish people talked about when we were in law school. This is just our perspective based on our experiences. We are not attorneys, and our podcast discussions should not be considered legal advice. Always consult a lawyer for your individual circumstances. Today, we are going to be talking about closing out your summer internship money, summer internship connections. Like,
Get
your
money.
summer's wrapping up. You've been making close
Get
to, well, if you're
money.
at market, depending on what market is these
Get
days,
money.
you're making close to
Get
11K a month. For some people, it's more money than they've ever seen in their life. Like, it's a good chunk of change. You can do a lot with that. So we're
Yeah,
going to
you
be
can change
talking
lives.
about the decisions that you have to make at the end of your summer, and closing out your summer, and also money, because I don't personally believe money is something that people shouldn't talk about. I think if people talked about how much they made, and the world would be like, people would stop getting underpaid.
Absolutely. Abso-freaking-lutely.
But yeah, I guess to start, if it's okay, I would like to talk about like the experience of choosing between different cities for the same firm.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you have a very unique experience with that. Unique for me because I didn't have that experience. So I'd love to hear about it.
Yeah, so my 1L summer, I was on the East Coast, and my 2L summer, as I think I've mentioned, I lived on the West Coast for 5 years before law school, and I was like, I would really love to go back. So I asked my firm if I could split between the East Coast office and the West Coast office, and they're like, sure. So I actually had a split summer, which was a really great opportunity. I got to experience, I got to see a lot of the people who I love so very dearly on the West Coast, and got to meet some of my friends' babies. But it gave me an opportunity to compare offices, and I think I went in with the impression that, every office culture was the same. And I know I'm not the only one who had this experience, but cultures really depend on offices. And what offices do depend on where they're at. On the
Absolutely.
East Coast, there's like, I would say, well, it depends on the firm. I won't get too into it, but the West Coast, LA is known for entertainment. So it may be easier to do like entertainment or transactional work in that space on the West Coast or in LA
Absolutely.
specifically. San Francisco is known for tech. So depending on what you want to do, like you want to look into what each office does differently. And this is something that I would recommend people go and look into during the interview process. But also be mindful if you are splitting time between offices that your practice group may be one person. If you're looking to split an office
Yeah,
with a city
absolutely,
that doesn't,
depending.
if you're looking to split your time between an office that doesn't handle that, and that will impact your cultural experience. And I think you all may have gathered from now, like, I'm really big on office culture because I spend so much time there. And I think just me being the person I am, I take in a lot of energy from the people around me. But with that being said, I would say that my experience in the two offices really helped me come to my decision because the offices were so different. Like, how people interacted with each other, even the layout. Like, one office was very open floor plan, which made it really easy to connect with junior and senior associates, whereas another office had more of a closed floor plan where there wasn't really time where you would see people in passing because everyone is in their own office. And I do prefer more of an open floor plan. And I know some people don't like that because they want to work heads down, door closed.
But I think that's hard when you're like a summer. Like it's fine once you start working, but when you're a summer, you really don't want that. You need to interact with people.
Exactly. So I guess my biggest advice would be to think about, again, what matters to you in a work environment, the work that you want to do. And considering that you're going to be spending a lot of your time at the office, if you are allowed to work from home. You know, these may not be factors that you have to consider. But also, you know, one office was actually the headquarters. So that played into the culture a lot. And even
Yeah,
though
and that
people,
will play a huge difference in the culture, regardless of where the headquarters is. That's going to be huge.
And what I mean by that specifically is, and I would love to hear like your experience with it if you care to share, but where I'm at, the headquarters is more lax because I think in a way, like, you know, it is where all of the work is happening and there's really nothing to roll. Of course, there's like people who are running the office, but just in terms of like how we're able to dress and the nature of the work as a summer, I would say it was more focused on social experiences and networking at the firm. Whereas if at the other office that I was at, it was not, it was, you know, the other side of the country. And I think it was very much more work focused. And they did play, but as I had never worked, well, I've only been a summer twice, but it was the hardest that I had worked at the summer. And I was happy to get that experience. I got a lot of really great experience. And I can't take that away from that. But it was a lot of work. Like there were instances where me and another summer were working until like 9 o'clock at night. And at the other office, that would be discouraged, even frowned upon, because they're like, your summer, you have your entire career here to do work. We want you to experience the culture of the office, where I feel like that was a piece that was kind of missing in the other office.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's even if you aren't necessarily at the firm's headquartered or like main office, a lot of firms do make an effort to get their summers out to the main office, wherever that may be. So there may be an opportunity to have that experience, but it can be that one experience is better or one experience is different. But I think it's also just like, it's just like when you go to like a different city. Cities have different cultures, right? Or, towns have different cultures, and it's going to be a different culture depending on what city you are. Even I don't think that I think firms attempt to have strong cultures across offices, but I think it's just very hard. I think it's very hard to have the same culture necessarily across each office. There might be some cultural through lines or some things that just don't fly at the firm or some things that are just normal at the firm, but there will be different cultures depending on what office is. And I think the key here, like you said, is just finding the culture that works right with you, because there might have been a summer who was with you who was like, the culture of the headquarters just isn't for me.
There
But
was,
exactly. So I think it's important to find what culture works for you. And if you do have the flexibility or the opportunity to speak up and have them want to know which office works best for you, you should take advantage of that.
And some questions that I would recommend that I wish I would have asked, just to clarify, because I think on both ends, on both like the firm that I was visiting or splitting with and mine, are expectations. So they allowed me to split. They told me what the split would be. It would be an equal split the summer. You know, it was a year ago now, but I think the summer is 9 weeks. So I
10,
did,
depending on, it can be eight to
I think it
10,
was
depending
10
on the
for me
firm.
because I did 6 and 4. And you know, my assumption was like I get to decide which office I want to be at the end of the summer because I knew that, you know, the summer, the tail end of the summer, they were making accommodations for me, like preparing me rotation or preparing rotations for me and all that good stuff. But the summer, the office I was visiting was like, we want you to decide before you leave. And if you decide before you leave, there's no reason for you to leave. You can just stay here. So I think going into it, I really wished I would have asked, when will I be expected to make a decision on which office that I want to choose to make sure that both managing partners are on the same page about that. And I would also want to be sure, like, or ask, is there flexibility? You know, if you love the first office that you're at, ask if you can stay a little longer. And if that will negatively impact your perception at the top office that's going to be at the tail end, and being like very clear about that. I was intentional with where I wanted to end my summer because I knew that there were some people who I didn't get a chance to connect with the summer prior that would be there towards the tail end. So, you know, if you are looking to connect with specific individuals in an office, make sure that they're going to be there when you are visiting or splitting your summer at that office.
Absolutely.
Anything else that you want to add on that note?
Yeah, I think it sparked something for me about also depending on the type of firm that you go to or the firm that you go to, they may assign you a practice group when you start. So you might be like immediately assigned like corporate and then or transaction and then go to the different practice groups within transaction, or you might be assigned like litigation and then be assigned the different practice groups within that. But some people do go into the summer and get assigned both like transactional and litigation at the same time, depending on the firm. And you obviously at the end of the summer, you're not going to be able to be like, yes, I sign on to be an attorney in transaction and litigation. So I think that if you also are a person who where you're at a firm and the practice groups are assigned before you start, I think you need to have clear communications around when will I be expected to choose the practice group, or will I have an option to choose the practice group? And if I'm entering splitting practice groups, is there a guarantee that I can have either of those, or should I know going into it that while I'm allowed to shadow in litigation, there's really not any room for me there? So if I decide to stay on at the firm, I'm probably going to be corporate.
Yes, and knowing that depending, it depends on your firm, but they will probably shuttle you to or want you to go to the practice group that needs people the most. And
Exactly.
if just using an example, if transactional is the largest practice group and people are like, I don't love transactional because of the hours, they're going to try to get people to go into transactional work. And that actually happened because my top picks for my practice groups, like the spaces filled up so fast. And I learned the practice group that I wanted. I was like, actually, I don't love this work. Like I had been doing some off-site things, and I was like, this is not what I see for myself. I did one, and I talked about this last episode, but I would connect with people and be like, hey, what are you working on? And do random, like one-off assignments, or what are they called? Discretionary assignments or discrete assignments. So they're usually assignments that are like quick tasks, you don't need a lot of context for it. And I did one for the practice group that I chose, and I loved it so much. I was like, can I do a phone call? Like, do you have anything coming up? And my summer was winding down. I think this was a unique experience, but it was in the last 2 weeks. And I realized I was like, this is what I want to do. I've only done two assignments, whereas I've done like five assignments for this other practice group, but this is what I want. So I talked to my advocate within the firm, and I was like, this is what I want. I know that this other practice group is expecting me, and I don't want to burn bridges. Would I burn a bridge if I didn't select them? And she let me know. She was like, they are expecting you, because I had met with all of the partners in the group, and like it was just a good vibe. But I was like, this is actually what I want to do. Plus, it was a split between litigation and transactional, which is something that I really, really, really wanted for myself. But in the last 2 weeks, I was able to meet with the partner who created the practice group. And it was a great discussion. He was like, if we take you, will you for sure want this? And I said, absolutely. Like, I will tell everyone else no. And he's like, you don't even have to do that. I'll do that for you. But if we take you, you'll want it. And I said, yes. And it was like a stroke of luck. But I think it's just, if I don't think you have to, and this isn't me saying you have to be 100% sure on the practice group you choose. There is mobility. Well, at most firms, I believe there's mobility. You can move around. I've talked to at least a dozen people who have moved practice groups, so you're not stuck.
Exactly. And honestly, also, if there's not room to move around at your firm, there may be room to just move in general, you know? So.
Oh, something I did want to mention is like the firm makeup. So some firms, especially like smaller offices, sometimes they're made up of like laterals or s swallowing another firm, or people like taking their practice group and creating a satellite office for a larger firm. So keep that in mind in terms of culture. Like if your firm has one culture that they're cultivating, but there's a satellite office that came from, a different law firm with a completely
Exactly.
different culture, I would expect that culture to kind of permeate through that new office.
Yeah, and be cognizant of that. That's a great point.
And a lateral, I think it's pretty self-explanatory, but it's not. A lateral is just moving from one firm to another in the same position.
Yeah, and yeah, kind of in the same tier. So you'll like move over as a junior associate to another firm as a junior associate. So I think I think that's a great point. And so I think with that, if you do kind of split, or even if you don't, you'll be left with a lot of conversations to have with yourself at the end of your summer and how to navigate that. So I think we should talk about that. So one of the things that's important to consider at the end of the summer, I guess we'll talk about the end of your 1L summer first. That's kind of important. If you are lucky enough, not everybody can get a 1L summer big law internship, and that is okay. If you don't get that, that doesn't mark you as a failure or
Not at
anything.
all.
It just marks you as someone who's going to have a great opportunity learning a lot, not in big law that summer. And if you decide you want to do big law again later, you'll have some great experience to take with you there. So I think, but if you are someone who has decided you wanted a big law internship, your 1L summer, and you were able to get that, there are some things that come along with that. You will have to make a decision, especially because OCI and things like on-campus interviews, as well as like in-person interviews, are moving up much earlier now. I was talking to some 1Ls, and it's already, pretty much started by the time you hit June nowadays.
What's OCI?
OCI is on-campus interviews, which is an opportunity for firms to, it's in person sometimes, but it used to be in person on campus, but now post-COVID, it tends to be virtual, but it's a chance for you to essentially submit your resume to a bunch of firms, and then they can pick you for like a first round of interviews and then callbacks and all that stuff. But essentially, it's a way to find an internship or a job. At the end of your 1L summer, you might have to decide, oh, do I want to apply to some, or not at the end, at the beginning now, you'll have to decide, do I want to apply to some other firm, some other opportunities? And if you do, and if you get those opportunities, you might have to decide if you want to go back to your firm full time or do what has been coined as a touchback. And so a touchback is essentially the idea that you are not going to go back to the firm that you were at your 1L summer for the full summer, but you might go back for a week or two or three or four. Some firms are like kind of strict about how many weeks they want you to come
Because you
back to
get
do the
paid.
touchback. Yeah.
And if you think about the concept of going back for a week, you're not really doing a ton of work. I know people who I personally haven't done a touchback, but I know people who did touchbacks just for the check. I wouldn't, I mean, you know, your prerogative is your prerogative, but like in a week or 2 weeks, it's mostly about connecting with people and networking to see if this is somewhere you see yourself in the future.
Exactly. And it kind of makes sense because you've already done the work there the summer before, so you don't necessarily need to do the full thing, but it's like a touchback just to kind of keep that door open, and also just to see if like the firm you went to instead, you if it doesn't work out or you don't love it and you're like, "Oh, I liked the other one better," you can have that connection still.
Something I wanted to bring up that I completely forgot, but we in our little group chat that we have, OCI was going on while people were working. It was going depending on what your start date is and like when your internship ends. So people were having to interview for other firms in the office.
And I think
And
it's even worse now because, like I said, OCI is earlier now. So you're going to be, but the thing, the great thing about it is firms aren't delusional. They know how the market works. So, like, I'm not saying you should, like, be like, oh, I'm gonna go do an interview right now. I can't hop on this call with you because I got to do an interview for another firm.
Don't say
But they will
that.
understand if you have other interviews, or if you even have to fly out to another interview while you're working during the summer, because they know that that's how it works.
I always err on the side of just telling people what they need to know.
Exactly,
So like
exactly.
to your point, kind of like I was never like, hey, like I have an interview. I'd be like, I'm not available at that time. And that's all that people need to know. I have
Exactly.
never had somebody ask, what are you doing? I think it's a little different if you're dealing with a partner who does have ex high expectations of availability, but generally like I'm not available. And you know, I'm a fan of like a little white lie. I have an appointment at that time. I'm not, it's not
Exactly.
even a lie. I have an appointment. I can't make that.
Exactly. And live by your calendar, because most people at your firm are going to live by your calendar. So if you have an interview, put it on your calendar. Don't put interview, but just put appointment on your calendar, and
Yeah.
that will be respected.
Agreed.
And I would say just communicate with, like, if you do find yourself running into issues, I would say either talk to someone else who's been in that situation, talk to your school, or talk to the recruiting at your firm.
Yeah. And I will say 1L, specific to the 1L experience, some firms, ours was specific to a program that I don't think exists anymore. Most firms will give you money at the end of the summer. Mine was $25,000. I tried to see if it could list it as a scholarship so it wouldn't be taxed. It
No,
was definitely,
it exists.
it was, oh, it does? Oh, good. You just looked it up. Good. So LCLD, if you're able to get, and I just believe in being transparent about like the money that's available to people. If you are able to become an LCLD scholar, it is my understanding is that the firm does have an option to give you this scholarship. I don't think it's required, and it varies. Mine was $25,000, but I know that we have classmates that have received like close to 50.
Yeah. And I think it's also sometimes firms, even if it's not through LCLD, sometimes firms will offer you scholarships that are contingent upon, like, in addition to your actual job pay, they'll offer you scholarships, but those scholarships may be like receiving the full amount of the scholarship may be contingent upon your return for a second summer, or may can be contingent upon your return to work as a full-time associate. So be cognizant and aware of those things as you're considering, like, whether you're going to go back or, all of those things.
And if you are interested in doing a touchback, you need to explicitly ask if you can still receive that money and do a touchback.
Yeah, and ask if your firm even does touchbacks, and talk to people. So the great thing about talking to people is, more likely than not, there will be a summer associate at your firm doing a touchback while you're at your firm. And so talk to that person.
If you know who they are.
Exactly. Most of the time, or I don't know if most of the time, but I know in some firms, they will tell you so and so is doing a touchback, or you'll see the book of, like, I say book, but it's like they'll send an email with all of the summer associates in it, right? Or you'll meet everybody at, like, or orientation or whatever. There'll be some point where you'll see the names of people who are going to be summer associates, but you'll notice one or two people aren't there yet.
Yeah.
And those are the people doing a touchback.
That's good advice to talk to them. And I would just see people. I'm like, I haven't seen you before. So I'd be like, hey,
Exactly,
are you a
exactly.
summer?
So talk to them.
Ooh, I can't wait to talk about the rags to riches and back to rags and
Oh, before we talk about that, let's talk about what to do after your summer's ended. So let's say it's 1L or 2L. You and I are both firm believers in sending follow-up correspondence, whether that
Yes.
be a thank you note at the end of the summer, just to say,
I
I
feel like it's a
appreciate you
dying
work with
art.
me. Yeah, it really is. And
And that's
that's what make it,
unfortunate.
but that's what makes it all the more meaningful, is
Yeah.
because it's not something that's commonly out there. People really appreciate it even more.
Because I think people don't see the value in it, but it is valuable. I made a list on my little legal notepad of so. I had like a series of people who were formal mentors, informal mentors, or just people who like took an interest in me. There's a lot of value in people who will take an interest in you and like hang on to those people, even if they're not in your practice group. But
Absolutely.
I made a list of people that I'm like, yes, I want to like thank them. And I made all of them were actually personal. So I'm into personalization. I know that that's a lot of work. So some people will make a template, but I actually emailed everyone individually and was like, hey, I wanted to like thank you for taking the time to like help me with this
Exactly.
specific thing. And it's something that I would recommend doing. You obviously don't have to sit down and pound it out in an hour, But just like make your drafts. The beautiful thing about drafts is they will sit there until you send them. So
Exactly.
like I started drafting as my summer was closing out because more than likely they're going to stop giving you assignments because they want to transition the work to somebody who's going to be able to pick it back up. So you may have some downtime. Write those drafts, draft emails. They mean a lot. And what I also did is I sent them to the associates and partners from my school email so that we could keep in touch. So it was like, not here's my email. If you ever want to, like, it wasn't me sending it for my work email being like, hey, if you ever want to keep in touch, it was like, hey, this is
Exactly.
the best way to reach
Exactly.
me.
Or I would send it. I think what I did is sent it from my personal email or my work email and CC'd myself on it. And another thing, like you kept your legal pad. I think that's a great idea. I kept a running spreadsheet because I started the summer with a spreadsheet of people that I wanted to connect with. And I tried to mark if I was able to connect with them or not. But I also kept a spreadsheet of people that I worked with, assignments I did for them, and like the connections that we had so that I could keep track of that.
One more piece of advice in terms of keeping track, because the spreadsheet brought it to mind about losing work product. If you worked on something that you are very proud of and you want to use that as a future writing sample, you have to ask your firm.
Yeah,
So
absolutely.
if you like, I regret not asking, that's why I'm bringing it up. But I wrote a memo on a topic I'm really passionate about, and it was, someone told me it was a really great memo. And I wish I would have asked, like, hey, if I wanted to use this as a writing sample, would I, one, be able to? And two, what would I have to redact and change and see if there's like a process for that? I highly recommend that, because you're doing, again, actual work product. And if you want to apply for future, opportunities, this is a great thing to have in your resume folder. I have a resume folder.
Absolutely. And I think it's also important to keep track of things that you work on that may be public facing. So some firms put together like white papers and stuff that they publish on certain topics. And if you contribute to that project in any way, like let's say doing research or something, your name will be in what's published, but it might not be published while you're there during the summer. So it's important to keep track of things that just you worked on. Don't take anything that's confidential or don't take anything necessarily, but just saying like I worked on this project with this person that may be published. You can keep track of that and say, okay, when it is published, I'll be able to pull that into my resume folder because it's public information.
Yeah, I think in general, it is always good just to have a folder where you keep writing samples, your resume, a cover letter, and to update them regularly. And I think anyone with a job, no matter what you're doing, you should generally like document all of the things that you do. So then when it does come time for review, regardless of your job, I've done this at previous jobs, you can be like, here's actually a running list of everything that I've done.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, sorry to stop us from getting to your passion,
Rags to riches.
but now we are here. So tell us.
So,
And we're back in the rags. So it's actually rags to riches and back again.
yeah, rags. So, I called you the spring before too well,
Yeah,
was
and
it?
I'm gonna set the scene for
Go
everybody.
ahead, go ahead.
We're in the middle of finals, like in the middle of finals. Like finals are happening. I think I've taken one already. I think I got another one coming. It is 8 p.m., maybe 7, probably 8 p.m. I'm still at school studying. Why? Because it's finals. And I get a phone call and it's from my dear friend on this podcast. And I'm like, oh, what's going on? Do you know how much it's gonna cost to live? And I'm like, what? When? Where? And just explain to them what you were concerned about.
I was like at home and thinking as one does when they're alone, and I was like, man, this summer, I was like, oh, I can't wait to get paid again because I'm broke. I was like, this summer will be my last summer getting paid until like I start my job, and that's generally fall to late fall. And I was like, oh my God, I was like, I'm gonna have to make this $30,000 last for 15 months on top of like the aid that I receive. I'm going to be effectively unemployed from May. Actually, no, because finals happen in April. From April until late fall. I was like, that's wild. That's like 6 months, right?
April till, yeah, it is
I
like
was like,
6 to 7 months.
6 months. And some people may be like, you know, I can make that. Like, I'm talking about I have to pay rent, I have to feed myself, and then I
Yeah.
have to move my stuff from where it is currently to the city that it will be in when I'm working. I'm like, that is a lot to do. And I love budgeting. So I called you because I was like, this needs to be a light bulb that goes
You were
off in
like an
people's
evangelist.
heads. You were one of the people on my list, but it's something that I wish.
I appreciate being on your list. I just wasn't
You,
in
I think you
the.
thought I was spiraling. You were like, you're spiraling.
I said you're spiraling because I'm in the middle of finals. I'm like trying to remember the rules of ethics, and you're like,
Budget.
you're like, how are we gonna pay for things in a year and
But it's something that was
a half?
on my mind because I was like, I need to start budgeting now. Because I'll be honest, my 1L summer, I was pretty frivolous with my money. I was like, great, I'm in this big city. I got this money that I haven't had before. Let's go to this delicious dinner and spend $100. You know, maybe it's not like the most expensive dinner, but I was like, I'll spend
You're like, let me
$100 per
spend
person.
$10. That's I'm for it. No, just kidding.
I was eating my the sandwich from my favorite place. That sandwich was like $15. I was eating it every other day. But anyways. I say all of this to say, at the beginning of your 2L, if you are like me and you do not have a lot of reserves because law school has taken it out of you, just be mindful of how you spend your money during your summer and what income you will have between when you start, what your start date is. And I think it's totally reasonable to ask your firm, hey, when do you expect that we'll start? So you can calculate that into your budget and leave like cushion. And also, you know, your loans start kicking in after 6 months. They give you a grace period, but after that 6 months, you need to start making payments. So I
If
made a
your
budget.
job, but I will say, if your job doesn't start within that 6 months, you can get it extended. The grace
I
period
didn't know
will,
that. That's really good to know.
No, so yeah, it don't feel like you. This is probably not a great motto to have in life, but student loans are the only debt that doesn't survive you in death. So I don't believe that you should kill yourself trying to pay them back. You should pay them back, but don't kill yourself trying to pay them back. And why I say that is because there are, especially if you're lucky enough to qualify for federal loans, there are a lot of there's a lot of leeway, and they will work with you.
And I would also say, like, I've seen other classmates of mine like change their living situation to like accommodate for what they needed to do. Like people moved out of their one bedrooms or studios into a situation with roommates. Like one of our friends was paying $300 for rent. That's nice compared to paying like $1,600 to live in a one bedroom. So I don't know if it was intentional, but I do think people kind of shifted how they were
Well,
spending
and
their
I also
money.
think 3L is, and we'll talk about this, but like 3L is a time where some, depending on the school you go to, people might decide to like study abroad or you do an externship outside of the city where you go to school or something. So I think it's also a time where you can decide to like take on a roommate or like live in a more affordable situation for the few months that you are in 3L in the city where you go to school. So it depends, but I do on the opposite end, like we know people who like left like 1L and 2L and had luxury cars. Like multiple people. So it's like
You get a lot of money.
it is what it is, but I think you make a great point about budgeting and being able to like advocate for yourself financially. So can you talk about some of the ways that you did supplement your income or figure that out?
I got a roommate. It was partially intentional. I wasn't actively seeking, but it just so happened that a friend was interested, and I was like, I could live with this friend. And you know, one friend was like, can I live with you? And I was like, I don't think that's good for our friendship. And I'm really happy that we didn't do that. Their birthday was just yesterday. Happy birthday. But
Oh, hey.
I did get a roommate, and that cut my rent in half, which was like really great. And also it was just kind of nice to like have someone who was also in law school. So that was one thing. I picked up additional campus jobs. I would say I had 2.5 2L. So I was a research assistant. I worked in admissions. And then I was also a I was interning for, no, I didn't do that until 3L. Yeah, so I was doing something else that
You
like
interned
paid
for
me.
someone off
But
campus for a bit.
that was 3L. So 3L I kept. No, it was 3L.
Oh, sorry.
Who did I intern for?
That old man, you were doing that
Oh, that
too,
was
though.
3L. No,
I
that was
thought
th
you did that too, though, because
No,
I
that was
could have sworn
3L.
I was in your house when you were doing something for him, and I wasn't in your house 3L.
So 2L, I would say I worked two jobs. I was a research assistant, which was part-time. I probably worked that, or actually this might be helpful because I've had non-traditional students who want to supplement their income ask me like how many hours a week I worked. As a research assistant, on average, I probably worked 5 to 20 hours max a month. I did not get a lot of work.
And I
So
think it can vary based on the professor and the type of project. So I did a
yeah.
research assistant for one professor where I was like 5 to 20 hours a month, like you. But then there was another professor who I wish I hadn't have done this for credit because it would have been so much money. But they had like a more consistent project that they were working on, and they were hiring research assistants specifically to work on this project. And because it was project based, it was a lot more work, and I could have made a lot of money.
And that's another thing you can do. At least we had the opportunity to do it for credit or for pay. Each professor, to my understanding, most professors get a budget for their research because that's, part of the reason that they're there. So they can allocate that towards research assistants. So it was like 20 hours a month max. There was one month where we were like ramping up. He was doing the work and I was like, oh, I love this work. Let's do some more. And he was like, great, I'm gonna send this your way. I'm gonna send this your way. I think that week I had like 40 to 50. And then for admissions, that was like working once a week. We got paid minimal, so I was probably making like $30, $40 a month off of that. But 3L, I picked up more opportunities. So I would say at the peak, I was probably working close to like 15 to 30 hours a week for my four different opportunities, which was like really nice supplemental income. I was making probably like 400 to 500 a month doing those like different things. And that is nice. According to my tax return, I made like a couple thousand. So that like really helps with supplementing like
Yeah.
income.
And I would say some people, but neither of us worked necessarily true off-campus jobs. Like we didn't work at like restaurants or like retail or anything like that. But some people do choose to do that in law school. And that's an option. I will say that this is always my advice to anybody in any type of school, whether it be undergrad or law school or anything. If you can, try to work on campus first
They're
because they're
forgiving.
more forgiving and understanding of you having to call off or not get something done because of classwork.
Because they
But
prioritize you being a student before anything else, and another job's not going to do that.
exactly. Versus I had friends who were like working at restaurants or something and kept getting put on shift, even though they were telling them, I have finals, you know, and the restaurant was like, I don't care. It's a Friday.
Yeah. Oh, and I forgot the other job. I was working part-time for off like a private law firm, which was actually really great. I probably won't put that experience on my resume because I was also I just probably won't put it on my resume, but I was doing like real client work, and that was really cool because I love like sharpening that skill of like writing and looking through discovery and doing all of that good stuff.
Yeah,
Yeah,
and
and
I
it's
think
just
that's really, sorry, go ahead.
It would be nice to, it's just like nice to have an extra person who will write you a letter of recommendation if you need it.
Absolutely. And I think we're talking about budgeting right now, and it's great to be able to get a job like that, but if you can't get a job like that, I would say if you're just looking like, 'cause like money is wealth, but also experience is wealth. I will say there are a lot of opportunities oftentimes to volunteer for different organizations and stuff. So I highly recommend doing that as well if you have the ability. And that's not
Yes.
necessarily relevant to what we're talking about right now. And we might talk about it later on a different episode, but I think it's important to consider like experience also part of your budget.
I agree. How you want to spend your time is really important. But I think the
Exactly.
biggest takeaway is just be mindful, like, until you have that opportunity secured, whatever it may be, just be mindful of like your money, like on top of grad, you don't want to damper graduation with like a lack of security around finances.
Absolutely.
And you
Absolutely.
know, think about, I would, ooh, a big one. Think about where you want to study for the bar. Like, where do you want to be? Do you want to pay rent because you would prefer to be alone, or would you prefer to like be in the company of your family and maybe not pay rent? Like, do you have the expenses to do that? And thinking about those things ahead of time makes the transition a lot easier.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I think that's a great discussion on kind of what to do after you've left it all, either after you've left your summer internship or after you've left law school, and just how to keep yourself together financially, which is very, very important. And I hope that you get to share a little bit more of your financial savvy throughout future episodes.
Rags to riches and back to rags. Getting paid, young lady, getting paid. See what I did
Hey.
there?
Yeah, that's really good. Young Dolph is like he's kind of the soundtrack to law school.
I love
Rest in
Key Glock.
peace.
I know.
Well, not Keylock. Keylock's not dead, but
No, but I love Key. I love Key Glock. I think he's
yeah,
so clever. I just love Memphis rap. But
I do
anyways,
too. Yeah.
first
But
segment.
so it's segment time. I believe you got something cool to share.
Should that be the name, segment time?
Yeah, but for now, until those people email us at twoblacklawyers@gmail.com and tell us another segment name.
Segment time, segment time.
It's
Let's all
almost
zoom
time,
seven,
segment
segment time.
time. Come along. All right.
What did we decide on?
So I think you were going to talk about something that is kind of personal to you. I believe that you're taking a little trip down south.
Oh yeah. So segment time is dedicated towards legal things. So I'm not taking the trip, unfortunately, because I'll be studying. But my family is going down south, specifically to Louisiana, which is interesting because it's a common law and civil law state.
And so tell us what that means.
So most of the country, all, I don't want to say all because I could be mistaken, but I'm pretty sure most of the majority of the country is common law.
Which is
Whereas,
based on English law.
yes, so common law is like, so there's like two legal systems, primary legal systems, common law, well, technically three, common law, civil law, and then there's like religious law. Common law is when the law is primarily derived from like statute, but judges use their discretion to like apply the law.
Yeah, so
So it,
judge made common law is it's sometimes analogized as judge made law.
yeah, so like that, and people might be like, well, isn't that how every system works? No, it is not. So as you may know, like as law students, you learn like, oh, this is common law, which literally means it is not literally, but it means that the law is not written down, but it is done through practice, like through the judge-made laws, as you have just said. And then there is civil law, generally speaking. And honestly, if you're studying like international law or comparative law, you'll know that there's a lot of crossover and it's not very clear black and white. But with civil law, generally the practice is you take the statute, you apply the law. There is no like judicial discretion.
And it's
Very,
often, oh, sorry, go ahead.
there's very little to judicial discretion. And oftentimes, if there is a question that can't be answered using the statute, it like rolls, and this, I'm thinking other countries, but it rolls up to like a higher judiciary that then answers the question and generally will kick it back down.
And speaking of other countries, civil law is often shorthand called French law, and common law is often shorthand called English law.
Which I think is pretty interesting because people are like, well, judges, you know, there's like these the separate powers. They're like, judges aren't supposed to make law. The legislature is supposed to do that. But with judge-made law, that's kind of what they're doing. And I think what civil law, in my mind, how I separate the two is that civil law is really hard on judges not making law. You read it, you tell people what it is, and that is it. But Louisiana is a split between that. What that looks like in practice, I'm not sure. I have not been. But what's interesting is that, you know, my grandma, she's 85. She's amazing, but she's not getting any younger. So we're trying to, you know, like figure out what she has in the world and sort through that. And there is land down south that we have to go down to Louisiana because there's a split between common law and civil law. So my sister is going to be taking her there, and we are going to get the deed, and then we're going to record it.
That is really cool. I am curious to hear how it goes, and then I'm curious to hear how that looks in like a civil law system.
I actually am curious to know what the split is, and I would love it if any of our like listeners, if anyone is in Louisiana, because it is a split. So I wonder like what the split is. Are there certain portions of the law that are reserved for like civil law and common law? And my understanding about civil law is because of how it operates, there's like a variety of courts because judges apply the law specific to their court, whereas, in most common law systems, judges will just kind of look at what's before them, but most civil law systems do have specific courts. There's like family court, and then there is, I'm trying to think of like tort court. But I would be interested to know. But yeah, I just thought that was interesting. I feel like this was more about comparative law than anything else.
Yeah, no, I'm very curious and it'll be interesting to see. And it's random because Louisiana is the only state like that in the 50
Because of
states.
its French history.
Yeah, so
Canada is also a civil law system.
yeah, but they're not in the United States. So
No, oh no,
yeah.
I was just thinking because they have French
French
influence.
influence, yeah. So I'm very curious to see what it's like in practice. And it's interesting because studying abroad, I did learn about like French law and France, they just don't have lawsuits in the same way that we do. And their system is set up more paternalistic to prevent lawsuits. So it's set up more where the government will tell you what to do and structures the laws and the legal system more where there's less like uncertainty and room, whereas like the court in our system, the common law system kind of lets it laws kind of like let people make leave more room for people to make moves so that there aren't as many so that like and if there are mistakes, the lawsuit will figure it out. Versus I'm curious as to like a civil system, how that looks, especially when you're dealing with land and property. I know in France proper, it's much more paternalistic in how they let people deal with their land and their
That's
property. So I'm
interesting.
very curious to see how that looks in Louisiana.
I love that. I didn't know that. It's just so interesting to hear how different legal systems work. Like, I mean, America, we must look so odd to other countries that have these like very clearly laid out systems because we literally let people, we met let judges decide on things until it gets out of hand, and then the Supreme Court comes in, like, oh, whoa.
And
Too many things going on.
I think it's so interesting, especially like one versus the other, like the ideals behind it and the system behind it. And one thing that I noticed at least is like the American system of like individualism is very much rooted in like I want to be able to make decisions for myself. And then once I mess up, I don't think I'll mess up is kind of how Americans look at it. It's like, I don't think I mess up, but if I do, then the courts can step in and like solve the problem. Whereas like France at least feels more like the government's like, no, we'll do it for you and we'll figure everything out. And then in the event that we messed up, then there can be a lawsuit, but the likelihood of us messing up isn't high.
It's so there's like a yeah there's like such a confidence in the government with that. I think I chalk it up to America being so young, but that could not be the reason. I also think it's
Yeah, I don't think, I
interesting.
don't know if it is the reason because it's based on English law, which is like the oldest system.
I think history is written by the people who won the
With the
wars, but
power.
yeah, there you go. But it primarily comes from like Roman law, but I think it's, oh, that's what I was gonna say. I also think it's interesting. So if you are talking to people, or if you are someone who studied law in another country and you came to the US, we have to complete undergrad. Well, you don't have to. You can do an apprenticeship, but generally you have to complete undergrad before you go to law school. Whereas other countries, your undergraduate experience is your law school experience. And sometimes it's like a little longer. That is something that I've noticed is more tied to a civil law system, which I think is pretty cool because what you're
Hi.
doing there is not, you are like, you are, you're, the interpretation isn't there. It's just interesting to me.
I think you're sparking such an interesting conversation. We should talk about this one day. Like, I really do think we should talk about, like, maybe we'll take some time to do a little bit more research, but I think anecdotally we could speak to, because I think both of us had made friends or talked to people who were from different legal systems studying at our law school as like international students, as well as like my experience studying in a different like legal system and your experience working with international law very heavily during law school. I think we should talk about this. I think we should.
That'd be
This is very
fun. I get
interesting.
insecure because I'm like, what if an international law professor is listening and they're like, actually.
I think that we have never thrown ourselves out to be experts on anything, nor will we ever throw ourselves out there as being experts on anything.
No.
We are just two black former law students offering our perspective and our opinions. This is not legal advice.
And I think that is a great transition to the fact that our opinions do not represent those of our employers. This has been great. I like the idea of doing an international episode, and then you can talk about your experience in France some more because I know people would love to hear it. Please send us anything that you would like us to discuss, whether it be her experience in France or like topics. I would be happy to talk about any
Or how
topics that I
you
feel
ended up
knowledgeable.
with four jobs in law school and what that
Yeah.
entails.
Would I recommend it?
Yes,
No. Would I do it again? Yes,
you would.
because
I
I would do it again because I needed that money. Like,
was
I'm too old to go to my parents and be like, please, like, send me money. Like, I'm 34.
say.
So, but anyways, yeah, send us anything you want, like any questions you have for us, anything you want to discuss. We really do want to hear from you all. We see that you're listening. We want to engage with you. Our email is twoblacklawyers@gmail.com. That's twoblacklawyers@gmail.com. Have a
Thanks for
beautiful day.
listening.